Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. The Gemara by the two dots says, Haya Shochet Veitiz. The Mishnah tells us that if he's cutting only in a single direction and then he takes off the whole head, that that's problematic because we assume then he was Doreis, that he put pressure on it, and that's the only way he could get through. And again, we saw the Machloka between the Ramban and the Rashba and the Ran on the other side about how much that means to cut, whether it means just the Simanim or the whole head. Then the Mishnah says that if the knife has Melot Zavar, it has the length of a next length, then it's fine. So now, Amar Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera qualifies that statement of the Mishnah. Melot Zavar, v'chutz letzavar. It's not enough that the knife has a length of a neck's worth, but it has to be even more, plus. Chutz letzavar, even more than that. Ibailu. Now the Gemara wants to know, what is that plus that he's adding on? Melot Zavar, v'chutz letzavar, k'melot zavar. Is it that he requires that you have on the neck a next length worth? Plus an additional next length worth, davalu trei tzavare, which would equal up to two next length worth. Odoma melot zavar v'chutz letzavar mashu. Or maybe he meant that you just need a length of the neck plus a little more, literally just a plus a little more. Tashma. So let's look at the next part of the Mishnah, which says hayashochet v'tish shnei roshim bevat achat. When had he cut two at one shot? Imesh l'sakin melot zavar echad. If it has a next length worth, kasher. So my melot zavar echad. What does that mean? It has one next length worth. Hilema melot zavar echad betulo. If you're telling me it means one next length worth, and that's it. Hashta bebehem achat bina melot zavar v'chutz letzavar. By one animal, you need length of one neck plus a little more. B'shtei mehabot sagiluk melot zavar echad. Then for one, two behemot, it's going to be enough with just one neck length's worth of a knife. El pshita melot zavar v'chutz leshnei tzavarim. When you say that it needs an additional neck length's worth, it means in addition to the two necks already. So that means with one behemah, you need two neck lengths worth, one for what's on the neck now, and an additional length, so that when you push through, or you pull, whichever direction you're going in, there's enough there that it could cut through the entirety of the neck. And similarly, when you have two behemot that are there, there you need pshita, melet zavar, v'chutz l'shnei tzvarim, you need to have both behemoth's length of neck in the knife, plus an additional neck length. That way, if you push through, you have enough that it would go down and that it could cut through both necks worth without putting on any drisa. Now, shmamina, melot zavar, v'chutz letzavar, shmamina. So from here, you can conclude that Rabbi Zera's statement, which you need a neck length's worth, means a neck length's worth, plus an additional neck length's worth. The Ramban just notes over here that, truthfully, you could have less than that. The reason we want you to have a neck length's worth is because we want you to be calm. We don't want you to be under pressure because that will cause you to put pressure on the knife. If you see that you have a whole width of a neck there and you're going in one direction, you can assume that it's going to go through and you're not going to worry about it. But the truth is that even with less than that, it's possible if the knife was extremely sharp that you could get through the neck even with less than a neck length's worth. But to be sure and to have a person calm and ensure that they don't do drisa require you to have at minimum another neck length's worth of knife beyond that of which is on the neck already. And that way we know you're going to do it in a calm and collected manner and not do any drisa. Now the Mishnah said, that's only true if you're going unidirectional. If you're going either pushing it or pulling it and you expect to cut the neck entirely with that movement. But if you go back and forth, then that's fine. And we said there, then it doesn't matter what the size of the knife is. Even a koshu, even the smallest knife, if you're going back and forth, you can just keep cutting, and that is a fine shchita. Amar Rav Menashe, be'izmil she'en lo karnayim. When the Mishnah says you can use a scalpel, it is a scalpel without horns on it. That is that they used to have decorative ends to the knives, where it used to turn up at the end and then have two horns that stuck up. You can see that today on some of the Mila knives that the Molim use, that they have something like that. It's a fancier knife. It's very sharp, and then it goes up and has these two horns that come out of it. So that knife that has those horns on it, we would not let you use that for the shchita, for the fear that that will catch one of the simanim. When you're going in or out, that could catch onto something and then tear the siman rather than actually cut through it.
Or you possibly could run into a problem of chalada if the tip of the knife digs in before you actually get the cutting going through.
So here, when we say that you're using an izmel, you're using a scalpel, it's got to be a plain and straight scalpel. Amalei Rav Acha Breid Rav Avya, the Rav Menashe, Machteh Mai, a needle. What is the din? The question over here is really based on the fact that the Mishnah said koshu, that the knife can be any size. Now Gemara is testing, what does that really mean, koshu? Does koshu literally mean a koshu? So what happens if you have a needle that has a sharp end to it? Can you use that needle and go back and forth, and that would work as a knife? Amale, machte mivza boza. He says, a needle, there's no way you could use it because it tears. It doesn't have any width to its point by which you could cut with. It simply would tear as you move it back and forth, and there'd be tearing the simanim, and that certainly would not work over here. So he says, no. Machte du ishkape mai. The needle of the leather workers,
all,
what's the din there? So the needle or the
awl
of the leather workers is thicker. It has a little bit of width to it, and therefore the point of the needle is slightly wide. They use it to tear some of the stitching that they use with the leather. So if they want to pop it out or tear it, they use this needle. But this needle is slightly wider than your standard needle. It comes down to a point, but a point that has some width to it. So now that's the question. Is that still enough of a mashu? Amalei tanina. That's our Mishnah. Afilu koshu. It says any amount. As long as you have a blade, then that's fine. My love, machted ushkape. Doesn't it sound like there that the Mishnah is indicating that they would include even a case of a needle that was used by the leather workers? It says, though, Ismail. No, it's including a scalpel. So Ismail, behedjik tanila. What do you need to tell me even the koshu that you can use a scalpel if a scalpel is already written explicitly in the Mishnah? It says, Prushe kamefarish. That next line in the Mishnah is explaining what it meant. When it said koshu beforehand, now what is the meaning of koshu? Ismail, it means a scalpel. So my koshu, Ismail. It says, achinami mistabro. That makes a lot of sense. Tisagadachta machted ushkape. If you're going to tell me that a leather worker's needle is kasher, hashta machted ushkape sharia Ismail mibaye. If you're already telling me that needle of the leather worker is okay, then you don't have to tell me that a scalpel is okay. That would be a kal vachomer. A scalpel that has a much longer blade certainly should be allowed. So why are you telling me something that's not a chiddush after you already told me the bigger chiddush, which is that you can use the needle of the leather workers? It says, no, maybe no proof from that, because Ismail, it's trichalei. The scalpel has to be identified separately, because salkadat chamina, I would have thought, ligzar Ismail she'en lo karnayim, atu Ismail she'esh lo karnayim. There was a reason to believe that a scalpel would be problematic, because there are problematic scalpels. Like we said when we began this section, that b'med dvarim amurim, when is this true? Only when it doesn't have karnayim, when it doesn't have horns on it. But if it has horns on it, then we wouldn't allow it. So now you would have had another havamina, which would be, well, if horns aren't allowed, maybe even without horns it isn't allowed, because if we allow you to use a scalpel, you might come to use a scalpel with the horns on it. So maybe that should be asur, and that's the chiddush, kamash malon, of the Mishnah, to tell us that it's okay. So even if the koshu really meant the needle of the leather workers, still you could have a reason to write Ismail in the Mishnah, even though it's much wider than that. So that leaves it as a safek. And if, again, when we generally deal with sfekot over here, it's lechumra, because we're dealing with the dindo raita. And if we don't have any conclusion, like over here with the Gemara, we're going to be machmir and say that you may not use it, that it is problematic in this case if you do such a shechita. All right, so next Mishnah, naflasakin v'shachata. If the knife fell out of his hand and then did shechita, afopi sheshachta kedarka, even though it successfully does a shechita in the normal way, psula, it is problematic, shenemar v'zavachta v'achalta, that you do zvicha, which is shechita, v'achalta, and then you eat it. Masha tazoveach ata ochel. What you do shechita on, then you can eat. So we're going to see in a second in the Gemara, but the indications from the Mishnah are that you require what's called koach gavra. We already said this earlier in the Masechta, that shechita is not enough that it happens. It has to be done with a person's koach. The individual has to provide the energy, the power, the movement in order for the knife to shech, and for it to be a kosher shechita. If you remember, we had the mills or the water wheels before, but we said it was only kasher on the first turn, because that was considered to be koach gavra. After that point in time, it was already not considered to be koach gavra, and it wasn't considered to be a kasher shechita. So that's the deficit in the Mishnah. When a knife falls out of your hand, you lack koach gavra. You don't have action and activity that's doing the shechita. The shechita is happening by itself. Now, even though in the Gemara and Baba Kama, we find a concept called Isho Mishum Chitzav,
that when a person lights a fire or does not care for a fire, we assign the culpability to the individual as if they've shot an arrow, and it's considered to be their koach that is doing the hezek, and they are responsible for it.
Which means that anything that is from a person is considered to be a derivative of his action or derivative of what he's doing. And therefore, if you believe Isho Mishum Chitzav, then over here too, when the knife falls out of your hand, that should already be classified as a derivative action of yours, because anything that leaves you is considered as if you shot an arrow and you took action. And Naflas Sakin should also have that effect over here.
Because the Gemara in Baba Kama says that if you leave a knife on a roof and then a wind that comes and blows it off, that you're responsible Mishum Eish for that knife that was blown off. So that should be no different than the knife falling out of your hand over here.
And therefore, there are those that want to suggest that this Mishnah is only according to one who says Isho Mishum Mimono, that the problem of Eish is a monetary nezek, not because it's considered to be an extension of action that you took. But if it was Isho Mishum Chitzav, maybe you would say Naflas Sakin would be okay, because again, it's considered to be a derivative of your action.
Which is the view of the Tosafot in Sanhedrin Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph.
Although there were those that want to distinguish between Isho Mishum Chitzav and over here the case of Shchita. Because by Nezek or Mazik, we're looking for culpability, responsibility. And over there, Isho Mishum Chitzav, we would look at that as being an extension of what you did, because you will be culpable. We'll assign culpability to that because we can connect you to the Nezek.
As Reb Chaim points out, that even the one who holds Isho Mishum Chitzav, he still believes that there are times where you're chayav because of Isho Mishum Mimono. And the distinction will be in a case where we can directly connect whatever's happening to an action or a force that you put into action, then it'll be Isho Mishum Chitzav. Once your koach ends and then something else takes over with it, then that will be only chayav Isho Mishum Mimono. And therefore, in the case where you leave a knife on the roof and the wind blows it, your action is done. It's your irresponsibility then that let the wind take over and blow the knife, and that's why you're responsible over there, because of Isho Mishum Mimono, not because of Isho Mishum Chitzav. And therefore, it's not considered to be your action directly, but rather just your culpability.
Over here, you need specific koach gavra. You need active input into the item, and maybe that Isho Mishum Chitzav is not enough there. It is an assignment of culpability. It's an assignment of the action, but maybe it doesn't really mean that you did a koach, that you actually physically moved it, and maybe that's a deficit over here with regards to the shchita. That's one way to look at it.
The Beit HaLevi
suggests that Enoch Hanami, the Mishnah, is not necessarily bound by Isho Mishum Kitzav, Isho Mishum Mimono. Could be according to either one of them. But the Gemara's Diuk clearly is according to the one who says Isho Mishum Mimono, which is Taima Denafla. The reason here is that it fell. Hai Pilahu Kshera. If you actually throw it down, actively throw it down, it's Kasher. Abagav Delo Mikavein. Even though you don't intend for Shchita. So the distinction drawn by the Gemara is not about whether you're intending or not intending for shchita. The difference the Gemara draws is between whether it dropped out of your hand or you actively threw it out of your hand. Say, man tana d'lo bi'inan kavana l'shchita. Who's the tana believes that you don't need active engagement to do a shchita? I mean that you have to intend for shchita. Amarava Rabbi Natan hi. Rava says that's the shita of Rabbi Natan. The tani oshaya z'ira d'min chavrayo. So now, again, this is interesting. First of all, d'min chavraya, Rashi says, min achabura, meaning that he's from b'nei ha-yeshiva. If you remember, the Balei Tosafot back on Yudbet, Amud Bet, said that d'min chavraya was the name of a place. So Rashi says it means from amongst the b'nei ha-yeshiva. Tosafot says it means from a particular location called chavraya. Then, oshaya z'ira, it's not clear which side here is z'ira modifying. Is z'ira, which means the small one, is it modifying oshaya? And therefore it is Oshaya the small one, and it'd be part of like a proper noun, a descriptor to Rav Oshaya. Or is it Zira d'min chavraya? Is the Zira modifying the latter part over here, which is he was the youngster or the youngest of the B'nai Yeshiva? It could mean that Rav Oshaya the younger or the small one, or it could mean Rav Oshaya who was the youngest one or the small one in the Yeshiva. So Rashi brings both interpretations. It's not clear which one is the right way to read it, but now, this braita, Zarak Sakin Lonatza B'Kotel, someone who throws a knife for it to get embedded in the wall, V'alcha V'shachta Kedarka, and on its way, it happens to do a shchita on its way to the wall, Rabbi Natan Makshir, Rabbi Natan says, no problem, good shechita. V'chamim poslim. And the chamim say it's problematic. Again, when we were back on Daf Yud Bet Amud Bet, we discussed what are the two tzadim over here. The way that Rashi learns it, the Ramban and others learn it over here, that Rabbi Natan does not require anything. He says, as long as there's koach gavra here, that is sufficient. And over here you have koach gavra, you're throwing it to the wall. It's clear that your strength is moving the knife. If it checks on the way, that's totally fine, even if you tended for absolutely nothing. The question is with regards to the Rabbanon. What's enough, according to the Rabbanon, to be considered a good shechita? So from here, they clearly say when you throw the knife into the wall, it doesn't work. What was the deficit when you threw it into the wall? There are two possibilities. The Balei HaTosafot suggest, back on Daf Yud Bet Amud Bet, that the deficit is the fact that you didn't have intention to cut the simanim. You might have an intention to do a chaticha over here because you intended for it to embed in the wall, to cut or to go into the wall. That's not enough according to the Rabbanon. The Rabbanon require not only a chaticha, but you have to have in mind for chaticha simanim. You have to intend to cut the simanim, even though you don't intend for shechita. That's the view of the Balei Tosafot. The Ramban over here and Rashi back there and here seem to indicate that chaticha would have been enough according to the Chachamim. As long as you intended for cutting, that would suffice. You don't need cutting of simanim. Cutting is enough. And here you're not trying to cut. Even though you're having the knife embed in the wall, that's not a cutting action. That's just to impale itself in the wall. But it's not to actually cut something on the way. Had you intended for it to cut something, that would have been sufficient to make it into a good shechita, even according to the Rabbanan. So that's the first question, is how much more do the Rabbanan need above Rabbi Natan? Rabbi Natan doesn't require anything. It just requires koach gavra. The Chachamim requires something more than that. Again, the Ramban Rashi think that more means it has intent to be cut, and we'll see that on the second half of today's daf. On the other hand, the Tosafot reads it as being more than just cutting. It has to be the cutting of simanim that you want in order for it to be kasher for the Chachamim. Rabbi Natan's makshir, where he doesn't require anything, just koach gavra, but Chachamim poslim, as we explained just now, the different opinions, what they do require over here. Truth is that even though we have a machlokot other places in Shas with regards to Kavanah, whether mitzvot tzrichot kavanah, mitzvot enam tzrichot kavanah, Ramban points out that that's not correlated with our discussion over here. Because our discussion over here is not about a mitzvah necessarily, and this may go back to the beginning of the Masechta, we gave the introduction as to whether shechita is a mitzvah or is shechita really a makshir or a matir. And that's what the Ramban suggests over here, that it's a makshir or a matir, and maybe over there you might have to have less kavanah, because you're not doing something that's an obligation, you're simply doing something that permits. And so maybe over there, kavanah is less meaningful or less necessary, or maybe vice versa. Maybe over here, where you're doing something that's a matir, and it's not inherently something you're chayav in, maybe that you need more kavanah because it's not an imperative. Something that's an imperative, maybe we assign the kavanah automatically to you because you're obligated to do it. So we assume that it's done as a mitzvah with kavanah, even if you don't have it. But here, where it's a matir, it's an option to do it if you want to be matir this item, maybe over there you need kavanah in order to do it. So he says this machloket over here about kavanah is independent of the machloket all over Shas of whether mitzvot tzrichot kavanah or in tzrichot kavanah. So hu tanila v'hu amarla. He brought this braita down, Rav Hoshaya, and he also said about it, halacha k'Rabbi Natan. The halacha is like Rabbi Natan, and that's what Rav is saying now, that our Mishnah is following that view of Rabbi Natan, because the diuk out of the Mishnah was that it's because the knife fell out of your hand that it failed. Had you thrown it out of your hand, it would have succeeded, even though you had no intent for cutting, no intent for shechita, and that's the view of Rabbi Natan, and that's what Rava says. Our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Natan. Mar says, V'hamra Rava chadazimno. Didn't Rava already mention this one other time? We already had the Mishnah at the beginning of our Masechta, and at the beginning of the Masechta, Rava made the same diuk out of the Mishnah there. Anybody who's doing a shechita and others are observing, watching them, then we said it was a good shechita. Who is the one does not require a kavanah l'shechita? Because some of the individuals that are mentioned in that part of the Mishnah are cheresh, shoteh, v'katan. Cheresh, shoteh, v'katan are not bar kavanah. They don't have kavanah. They aren't b'nei dat that they can have kavanah in this situation. And there we said, if someone's standing over them, it works. So you see that you don't need kavanah for shechita. And on that, we said, who is the tano that does not require kavanah by shechita? Rabbi Natan. And Rava again said over there that it's Rabbi Natan. So why does Rava have to tell us the same information twice? First of all, he's telling us in the first Mishnah that the fact that somebody can oversee a cheresh shoteh v'katan is enough to make it kasher, even though you're lacking in kavanah. And he says over there, that's Rabbi Natan. And then we have another Mishnah over here telling us the same thing, that it's Rabbi Natan. So there are a number of issues to address over here. The first of which is, why is there a lack of kavanah when somebody's standing over a cheresh shoteh v'katan? That we discussed earlier in the Masechta. We saw the Balei HaTosafot and other Rishonim that try to distinguish between this case and the case of Get. Or the case of Get, where you could someone standing over the cheresh shoteh v'katan and they're writing the Get. Over there we said it was a kosher Get. Why is it a kosher Get over there when you need Lishma? And over here, by Shechita, we're saying, oh, it means that there's no Kavanah. So the Balei HaTosafot noted the difference in the language. Over here it says, Acherim ro'im oto. Over here, it just means somebody's observing the other individual. They're not guiding the individual. They're not involved in the shechita with them. They're simply observing it from afar. As opposed to the case of get, where it says that they are messiah. They're involved. They're actually working together with them. And therefore, that interaction is what generates the kavanah. You can have this vicarious kavanah be placed into the item by the person overseeing the reading of the get, because they're actively involved. That was the way the Balei HaTosafot distinguished. We saw other chilukim, like that of the Rashba, who says that if it's something that requires outside interaction, for instance, a get can only be done with permission of the husband, permission of the wife. They have to intend to want to give the get in order for you to be able to write a get that is lishma for them. But if they're not acquiescing to it, then you can't do it. So since it requires outside participation, you can also have outsiders imbue it with kavanah. By shechita, you don't need anybody else's permission to do shechita. If it's your animal, if it's your item, you can do shechita as you please. Therefore, you can't have an outsider imbue the shechita with kavanah, and therefore the overseer is not going to help in that case. So there are distinctions within the Rishonim. That's the first thing. The second thing is, and Rashi notes this as well, why is the Gemara asking this on Rava? Isn't this a problem in the Mishnah itself? Why does the Mishnah bring down twice that ein tzrichim kavanah? Rava is just giving an answer that the deal from the first Mishnah, the deal from the second Mishnah says no kavanah. So Rava in both cases says, oh, that's Rabbi Natan. Okay, so I understand you can ask on Rava. Why don't you ask very basically on the Mishnah? Why did the Mishnah tell us the same information twice? So to that, Rashi says that v'lo parich tanina chada zimna, we don't say, oh, we already learned this in a Mishnah before, mishum de matnitan lo tani behedja, hepila huk shera, el Rava diekla. That is because the Mishnah never explicitly gives you that information. Now, by the cheresh shoteh v'katan, it's a little more explicit. It's not absolutely explicit, but a little more. But it says that someone overseeing them makes it kasher, even though you can't imbue kavanah into the item. So that shows you that you don't need kavanah b'shechita. Over here, if you read the Mishnah here at face value, you don't see anything about kavanah. The only thing you see about kavanah is, if hahi, it was the diok that's made, taimo de nafla, hahi pila huk shera. So that is v'afagav zol mitkaveh. So it only comes out of a diok of the Mishnah. It doesn't come out of a direct statement of the Mishnah. So something that comes out of a diok of the Mishnah, then you don't need to say, oh, the other Mishnah wrote it already, because over here you're not explicitly writing it. Over here the Mishnah is teaching about Koach Gavra. It's not focused on Kavanah. As an aside, it happens to teach you about Kavanah as well. But that's not a direct statement of the Mishnah. That's why the Gemara is not asking, why does this Mishnah say the same thing the previous Mishnah said? Because in our Mishnah it's not explicit. It's only an inference from the Mishnah. And that's fine. He can have something that turns out to be an inference if he's teaching you another halacha, and that's not considered to be extraneous or duplication. On the other hand, for Rava, who in both cases says, oh, that's Rabbi Natan, that seems to be a more of a duplication. And now the Gemara creates a tzrichuta between the two statements of Rava with regards to each of the Mishnayot, and then we'll come back and read it like the Balei HaTosafot to think otherwise. So that tzricha, you need both of them. Diyashminan hatam, lishum dekag mekavein, lishum chaticha ba'olam. Over there you need to tell me, because over there is a chaticha going on. The cheresh shoteh and katan are intending to do a chaticha. They're intending to cut. Not only are they intending to cut, they're intending to do a shechita. Just happens to be there's a deficit because they're a cheresh shoteh and katan. They're not b'nei dat, but they're definitely intending to cut. Over here, where he doesn't even intend to cut at all, emalo. Maybe over here, that would be a deficit, even according to Rabbi Natan. So that's the chiddush that Rava brings over here to tell you, even in the case over here, it's still considered to be a kosher shechita according to Rabbi Natan. Had you only had the Mishnah over here, mishum de ga'ate mikoach ben dat. That's because it emanated from someone who has the capacity to imbue it with dat. Meaning that it's someone who is chayav in shechita, someone who is a bar dat. maybe then if it falls, it's no good. But if he actually pushes it down, throws it down, it would be good, even if you lack kavanah, because he has the capacity to have kavanah. Over there, what doesn't come from someone has the capacity to imbue it with kavanah, emalo. Maybe over there, you would not say the din of Rabbi Natan. Tzricha, and that's Rava's Chiddush. Rava's Chiddush is that Rabbi Natan's din applies both to that Mishnah and to our Mishnah, and each one of them is a Chiddush that Rabbi Natan should apply in both of these situations. That's the way Rashi reads it. The Balei HaTosafot read it slightly differently, and it makes the Gemara more complex in this Tzrichuta, but he says that the Gemara is focused on the Noatzah B'Kotel. The Tzrichuta is not between the other Mishnah and this Mishnah, but rather between Noatzah B'Kotel, El Aparich. The question of the Gemara is the following. Mishum du k'mina on the haike Rabbi Natan. Now that we're setting up the Mishnah like Rabbi Natan, Alma makshura matnitin, afil heicha delo mikavin l'chatichat basar. So we can see from our Mishnah that even if you throw it and you don't intend to cut basar, kamo ozerach sakin l'noatzah b'kotel, like when you throw the knife into the wall and it beds itself, it works. Bimkein, lamale the rava, the medak, haipila hukshira. Then what is Rava adding over here when he says haipila kshira? And so what Tosafot says is that Rava, back on the original Mishnah by Cheresh Sotah V'Katan, says that that Cheresh Sotah V'Katan, that part of the Mishnah, was governed by Rabbi Natan. And that's why there's no requirement for Kavanah. And he brings the proof from Noatzah B'Kotel, the case where you throw the knife at the wall and it cuts on the way. And Rabbi Natan says that's totally fine. Now the Gemara's question is not about the Mishnah, the previous Mishnah, the Cheresh Sotah V'Katan. It's about that case of Noatzah B'Kotel. Gemara says, once I know Noatzah B'Kotel, when you throw the knife at the wall, that if it cuts, then it works as a shkita for Rabbi Natan. What do you need a Mishnah over here to tell me that if you throw a knife down and it cuts, that it works? What's the chiddush in this Mishnah versus Noatzah B'Kotel? Why is there any difference between the two of them? And that's what the tzrichuta is. The tzrichuta is between the Noatzah B'Kotel and the Mishnah. And that's what Tosfot says over here. Umishani, da'ava mina the Noatzah adif, that throwing it at the wall is better, to meet kavei miha b'chaticha ba'alma. Because over there you intended to cut something. But over here, you have no intention for any cutting whatsoever. And that's the chiddush over here. So that's one direction. That's the tzrichuta in this direction. Once you know Noatzah B'Kotel, I still need to know our Mishnah, because our Mishnah is even a bigger chiddush. That not only when in a case when you're throwing it to cut, is it good, but even when you throw it down, where you have no intention to cut whatsoever, it's still good. That's the chiddush in our Mishnah. That's why you have to bring the Mishnah, even though you already know Noatzah B'Kotel. Then, Yoshmina Hipila, if you told us about our Mishnah, and tell us what it says, Hashta Hak Tzrichuta Lohavi Dumi Leidach. This Tzrichuta is not the same as the other one that we had before, because the other one was comparing Noatzah B'Kotel to Hipila, to our Mishnah. Now in the reverse, it's not that way. Now the Gemara is saying, well, once you know our Mishnah, why do you need Cheresh Sotah V'Katan? Now it's comparing it to the first Mishnah. Once you know that if you throw it out of your hand, it works, then what do you need to tell me about a Cheresh Sotah V'Katan that are being supervised that it works? Of course it should work over there. That's the second Tzrichuta of the Gemara to tell you, well, here it was done by a Bardat. Then over there, maybe it wouldn't work because it's not being done by a Bardat. And that's the Chiddush over there by the Mishnahs. Tosafot sees it as a three-way Tzrichuta. The first statement is saying, why, if you know Noatzah B'Kotel, do you also need to know our Mishnah? And then the second one is saying, once you know our Mishnah, why do you need Cheresh Sotah V'Katan? So he includes all three of them. That's why the question's on Rava, because Rava compared the case of Cheresh Sotah V'Katan to Noatzah B'Kotel. That comparison is what the Gemara is challenging, and that's why it's not a question on the Mishnayot. Mishnayot could be read independently. It's the diuk of our Mishnah versus Noatzah B'Kotel, which Rava makes both of those and says it's Rabbi Natan. And then the Gemara says, what do you need that for? If you know Noatzah B'Kotel, why don't you know our Mishnah and the diuk of our Mishnah already? The answer is, because there's different. But that's Tosafot L'shitatam. That Noatzah B'Kotel, you already have kavona l'chaticha. We learned, and I noted that Rabbi Rashi and the Ramban say that throwing it at the kotel isn't any kavona for chaticha at all. It's just throwing it at the kotel, and it happens to cut along the way. That's why the chachamim, that makshir there, would be makshir if you had intent for chaticha, according to them. According to Balei Tosafot, when you throw the knife at the wall, you are intending for chaticha. And still the chachamim say that it is problematic. That's why he requires the chachamim have an even upgraded statement, which is, that you need chatichat simanim of kavanah in order for it to work, because chaticha is not enough, and you see that from Noatzah B'Kotel. For Tosafot, Noatzah B'Kotel is different than just throwing a knife down, because there you have kavanah l'chaticha, and that leads him to have a higher standard for the chachamim in kavanah, versus the Ramban and Rashi, who think that throwing it at the wall is no different than throwing it out of your hand. Those are exactly the same cases, and the question of the Gemara here is not about that. It's between the Mishnah in the beginning and the Mishnah here, the way Rava is bringing Rabbi Natan in both of those scenarios. All right. Now the Gemara continues. We move on to a very interesting area of halacha. Itmar nida shenensa v'tavla. Was a nida was compelled to go to the mikveh. She was forced into the mikveh. She didn't go necessarily willingly into the mikveh. Now that her tefillah is done, the question is, was that a successful tefillah to make her tohura from her nida? She is allowed to be with her husband. She is considered to be tohura for her husband, but she may not eat truma. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, af le beita lo tahara. Even for her husband, she's not considered to be tahara. Amar le Rova the Rav Nachman. So Rova says to Rav Nachman, the Rav, according to Rav, the Amar tohura le beita, vasura le chol betruma, that he says that there's a difference. For a husband, she is considered to be tohura. For the truma, she's not considered to be tohura. Avon karet hutra, iser mita miboy. You're allowing avon karet, you're allowing the nida to be together with her husband, and nida is an iser karet if you violate the iser of nida. So if you're going to allow that, then with regards to mita bidei shamayim, which is a punishment for eating truma while you are tmeya, karet is more severe of a punishment than mita bidei shamayim, and therefore if you're going to allow her to be with her husband, why wouldn't you allow her to eat truma? Something that's much more stringent. You are being matir, then why over here would you permit the truma as well? Now Rashi says over here, v'karet chamur mimita, that karet is more stringent than mita bidei shamayim, deyamav nichratim, because his life is cut off, vizaro nichrat, and his offspring are also cut off, deyertiv aririm iyu, because the pasuk says that they will be aririm. Aririm means to be without children, to be childless, and over there the Gemara says childless either means if you had children, they'll lose the children, if they don't have children, they won't have children. Arimiyu. This is based on Rashi's view as to what the din of karet is. Rashi believes, and you can see this in the Gemara in Shabbat and Daf Chafhei, and as well as many other places in Shas and in Chumash, where Rashi explains that all karet is the same. Anytime the Torah uses karet, it's the same punishment. So sometimes in the Torah it says arimiyu with regards to karet. In other places it says nichrutu yamav, that he will be nichrutu mitoch bnei Yisrael. Rashi sees that as being all one big package. And that means anytime there's a punishment of karet, all of the dinim of karet apply to that individual, which means that the childlessness, the cutting off of days, being knocked out of Klal Yisrael, all of those items apply to all times that the Torah uses the word karet. The Ramban and other Rishonim do not agree with Rashi and believe that there are gradations of karet. The Ramban says, how could it be that you have a swath of mitzvot whose severity are different and they all have the same punishment of karet? There's got to be a change in the nature of the punishment based on the severity of the crime or the aveira that you do. And therefore he says that if you look carefully, the times where it says aririmi you, or the other more emphatic and stronger lashonot of karet are associated with fundamental aveirot, like things like avodah zarah and other items like that, where these are fundamentals of the faith. And therefore, that karet is a much more stringent or higher level karet. And therefore, he says that arim yu doesn't necessarily apply to all cases of karet. So, Rashi over here makes a blanket statement that karet is always greater than mita bidei shamayim because of arim yu. But according to some of the Rishonim, arim yu doesn't apply to all cases of karet because you have to look and see what's the severity of the violation versus what's the way the Torah expresses the karet in that way. So that's just as a side note. The Balei HaTosafot also point out that Ipcha Habalei the Meimar. The way that he's structuring it here is if she's mutar to her husband, she should definitely be mutar to the Truma. So the truth is that he should have written it the other way around. Dabshita, Dabein and Kavana b'Truma. It's clear to us that you need Kavana when you go to the mikveh to be Tahor for Truma. So he should have said the other way around, which is if it's Asur for Mita Bidei Shamayim, then certainly it should be Asura for her Bala because that's a Chiyuv Karet. So Tosafot says the way that it's phrased in the Gemara, according to Rava, is that if you're matir her husband, you should be matir truma. But it's a given that truma is not mutar over here. So if that's the case, then really the statement should be the other way around. If truma is not good, then certainly she shouldn't be able to go to her husband. Or that's the nature of the question. So Amalei, Rav Nachman says back to Rava, Bala chulinu, v'chulin lo ba'i kavana. It's a very good reason why there's a difference here. Her husband is chulin. Chulin don't require intent when you go to be mitahar yourself. If you go to the mikveh to become tohorah, simply going to the mikveh to become Torah is enough. If you end up in a mikveh and you are Torah, you're done. That's it. If you end up in a mikveh, you can go back to your husband. That's chulin. By kodoshim, we have a higher threshold, which is that you have to have intent. You have to intend to be mitahar yourself for levels of truma, for levels of kodesh, meaning that there are different levels of tahara. And just going to the mikvah stam is not going to suffice by truma, because you have to have intent. So here where she was compelled to go into the mikveh, so for her husband, it's done. She went into the mikveh. That's what's required for the din of nida vis-a-vis her husband. For truma, to eat truma, you have to have intent to be mitahar l'shem truma. That didn't happen over here because she was forced into the mikveh. Mana temra. And how can I show you, or how can I prove that to you? Titnan, because we have a Mishnah. Gal shenitlash. If you have a wave that's separated, ubo arba'im sa'ah, and the wave itself contains 40 sa'ah on it, v'nafal ala adam, v'ala keilim, and then it falls on an individual, and the utensils that he had with him, tehorim. They are tehorim. It functions like a mikveh in that sense. It's got 40 sa'ah. It's a full body of water. So in general, when it comes to mikvot, there's a requirement of 40 sa'ah because it has to be done by shborin. You have to have water that's gathered together, stationary water, that then is mitaher you. In cases where you go to a stationary mikveh where you've collected rainwater, and there you have to have 40 sa'ah in order to be tahor. There's a separate mechanism of tahara, which is zochalim, which is flowing water. If you have a mayan, you have a live spring of flowing water, then you don't need arba'im sa'ah gathered in a single place. You can actually go into the mikveh in the moving body of water, ve'zochalim, part of water. So then you have to determine when you are going into a river, is the river, and this is a discussion in the Gemara in Shabbat and other places in Shas as well, when the rainwater is flowing through the river. So you have a mix of rainwater and mayan water. In those situations, how do you determine whether you're using the zochalim, the mayan water, which would have been fine in the moving flow of the water, or are you using a mikveh, and then you'd have to gather the water into a stationary location and make it into an ashborin. So there the Gemara discusses what Avuah d'Shmuel used to do depending on the season with the waters, because some seasons the rainwater was exceeding the mayan water, and other seasons it was the other way around. So sometimes you need ashborin, sometimes you don't. Now, with regards to the ocean, technically, if you actually submerge in the ocean itself, that would act as a mikveh by itself. But over here, the water detached from the ocean. Even though in general, when it comes to the ocean, you can't be mitahar with things that are moving because ashborin, gathered water works, not things in motion. Nevertheless, they suggest that this Mishnah in Mikvot follows the Shita of Rabbi Yossi, who in two Mishnayot beforehand says that the Yamim, when it comes to water bodies like the oceans, they can be mitahar bezochalin. They can be mitahar in movement or with water that is flowing or in motion. But then the question would be, why then don't you need a koshul? Because when you use mayan, when you use a spring instead of a mikveh of ashborin, you don't require 40 sa'ah, you only require a koshul. So why over here do we require that the wave have 40 sa'ah in it? A koshul would be sufficient. So that's actually a machlok at the Taz and the Shach. The Shach says because it detached from makom chiburo, it detached from the place or its source, therefore it needs 40 sa'ah in order for it to be considered significant. Whereas the Taz says that you need the 40 sa'ah, because even in a mayan, a koshul works, but for a person to be covered in water, you need 40 sa'ah. It's not a question of whether how much you need for the thing to be kasher, you just need that much water to cover the body of the individual. And that's why you need 40 sa'ah in the wave, so it covers the entire individual, not because without it, it wouldn't be a kosher mikveh, it just wouldn't work because the person wouldn't be covered in water. And the machloka between them might relate to how you view something that detaches from a mayan. The mayan imbues the waters with two properties. One is a property that you only need a koshul to go to the mikveh, and they also imbues it with the property that it works bizochalim while it's in motion. And the question is, once it detaches, which of those two properties stay with the item that started in the mayan? Is it both properties, meaning both the fact that you only need a koshul and the fact that in motion it still works? Or is it only the fact that it's in motion, it still works, but the koshul is only when it's attached to the mayan? Does that true? Once it detaches, then it takes on the properties of a regular mikveh, which would require 40 sa'ah. And that might actually explain the difference between the view of the Taz and the Shach as to why you need 40 sa'ah over here. So now, the Mishnah tells us that if it falls on an individual and on utensils, that works. My love. Now the Gemara says, we'll be mitayek out of that Mishnah in mikvot. Adam dumi l'kelim. The person has the same status as the kelim. Ma kelim delo mikavne, af adam nami delo ba'i kavana. Just like over there, the kelim don't have kavana because they're inanimate objects, so too the person doesn't have kavana. And therefore, you see that you are successful at attaining tahara even when you don't have kavana. Mimai. How do you know that's the case there? Dilma b'yosheve mitzapeh askinan. Ema da'itlash hagal. Maybe he was waiting. He was waiting for that water to come. When will it detach? That big wave to come and hit him. V'kelim dumya da'adam. And then go in the reverse order. Ma'adam d'be'inan kavanah. Just like the person requires kavanah because he's sitting and waiting for this wave. Af kelim nami d'kamekavim lu adam. So to the kelim, even though they're inanimate objects, they still require kavanah. Not their own kavanah, but someone who's bringing the kelim there has to have kavanah to be mitaher them. And then you would require a kavanah for tevilah. So then you can't use that mishnah as a proof that you don't need intent for tara by mikveh. The first way we learned it was that kavanah is not necessary. And you see here by the wave hitting the individual that he becomes tahor, even though he had no kavanah. Where it says, how do you know he didn't have kavanah? Maybe he is yoshev umitzapeh. He's sitting and waiting for it. So because it says, v'chei teima, if you say, v'yoshev umitzapeh, ma'ilam emra. If you say that if he's sitting and waiting for it, then what's the chiddush in the mishnah? You know, if a guy's waiting to get it come and it comes, then what's the chiddush? Why do you need a mishnah to tell you that information? So ma'od teima ligzor mishum chardalit shel geshamim. Maybe we should have to make zera because of a chardalit shel geshamim. I'll get back to that in a second. It's the machloket Rashi and Tosfot what that is. Inami ligzor rashim atu kipim. Or we'll have to make a zera by waves. That the rosh of the wave, atu the kippah. The kippah is the hooded area of the wave. Because a person might just put up his kli up in the wave above when it's still arching. That'd be mitaher in the avir, in the air, and that wouldn't work. Now even by the case of the gal shenitlash, the Gemara is going to qualify and say that only works once the gal starts to come back and re-enter the ocean again. That's when it's mitaher, and that's what's called rashim. On the other hand, the kippah, the hood or the crescent of the wave, won't work because that's in midair. And you can't be midair something in midair. So there would have been a possibility over here to be gozer kipim atu rashim. It works when it's the rosh, but maybe we should be gozer that while it's in midair, somebody might try to be midair there, and that won't work. So that would have been the havamin over here to be gozer rashim atu kipim. And the kamash balan is that we're not gozer in this case. So that's the chiddush of the mishnah. Or you might have confused it with a chardalit shel gishamim. Rashi over here claims that a chardalit shel gishamim is zerem hagishamim hamikaleach minahar bikoach. It is flowing rainwater that's coming down the mountain at high speed, and you are not allowed to be tovlimbo. You can't go into that type of mikvah. The nitzok, the katafres, enam chibur. When it comes to a connection and a decline or incline where water is moving, that's not a chibur. You say you have rainwater up the mountain, you have rainwater down the mountain, and it's moving. So if I take all the water from top to bottom, I have 40 sa'ah there. But it's heading downhill, it's on a decline. Even though there's a lot of water below, a lot of water above, it's not considered to be a chibur. And Rashi says the word chardalit means katafres, midron, a decline. Rav Haigon Garis, hardalit. He has it with a hey instead of a chet. Shibaim mi dalyo shel har. They come from the drawing of the mountain, meaning they come from the waters that are coming, the rainwaters that are descending off the mountain. That doesn't work because you don't have ashborin. So that's what Rashi says. That's the problem over here. We might think that you would think in the ocean moving water is good. So too over here by the mountain, you'd think that moving water is fine. And that's not true. By the mountain, the moving water is not fine because we don't consider it a chibur to all the water above and below, as opposed to the ocean where there is 40 sa in that single location. Because that whole wave has 40 sa'ah in of itself. So you have a unit of 40 sa'ah that's going to land on this individual and all contained in one location. And that's why it works over there. So their cases are different. You would have thought we should be gozer, the wave, up to the case of the mountain. We say, kamash man, that we don't. That's the chiddush of the mishnah. That's the way Rashi learns it. And then Tosafot says, perish akunches. He says, v'chinam perish kein. Dafilu yesh kama sa'im ba'oto midron, asur litvobo. Has nothing to do with whether there's water above and water below. Even in that decline, if there was 40 sa'ah in the location he was in, it wouldn't work. The mikvah enu mitaher bezochalim. Because period. Mikvahs don't work when they're moving. So if you have 40 sa'ah that's moving, that's not going to help you in this situation. So when you're on the mountain, even if you have 40 sa'ah in one location, and the part of the river that you go into with the rainwater coming down is 40 sa'ah, that still won't work. Because it's in motion. It's not stationary. It needs to be ashpon, it needs to be gathered together. Any water that is moving is not mitaher. Mayan, that can be mitaher in motion. Anything that's a spring, that can be mitaher you, even if it's moving. But ashboren, or rainwater, only works when it's gathered and in a single location. So Tosfot says it has nothing to do with chibur above and below. It has to do with the fact that even if you had 40 sinim in one location, it doesn't work here because it's in motion. That's the failure over here. It's not about there's no connection to what's above and connection to below. Even without that connection, and you have 40 sinim here, it still doesn't work because it's in motion. You need ashborin. So Tosfot just says that Rashi's explanation here is unnecessary because the psul has nothing to do with getting 40 sa'ah, it has to do with motion. If it's in motion, even if there's 40 sa'ah in motion, it's not going to help you. And even though there's a difference between rainwater and the ocean over here, because the ocean works bizochalim, which is not true by rainwater, you could see people confusing the two issues. And that's what the gzera would be about.
Kamash malan, delo gazrina. So then the chiddush of the Mishnah, if you're yoshev and mitzapeh, which means you have kavanah, the chiddush of the Mishnah is that we're not gozer either for kipin, or we're not gozer for the chardalit shel gishamim. How do I know that you can't go to the mikvah in the hood or the crescent of the wave? The Tanya, you're allowed to go in the mikvah to the heads of the waves, but you're not allowed to use the crescents up in the water, because you can't go and be mitair something in air while it's floating out, while it's in motion in the crescent.
As Rashi says, there's no such thing as a launched mikveh or a mikveh that is up in the air in motion that is mitaher. The Rambam says it's a kavachomer from, if it doesn't work by flowing water to be mitaher, certainly it doesn't work when it's in midair.
That has to be the rosh, where it's actually going to come back and then land into the ocean on you, that's when it works. But in midair, you can't be mitaher, that doesn't work.
Ella, so now still, chulin d'lo ba'i kavana mi'aminalan. Where do we know that chulin does not require kavana? You tried to prove it from that Mishnah. We said that you weren't necessarily right. You could explain the Mishnah in an alternate way. You said there was no kavana when you're in the ocean, that's why it works. Maybe you did have to have kavana, and we explained why that would be a chiddush that you had kavana there. But, so now you don't have a proof from that. So d'tznan, we have another Mishnah. Peiroch naflu l'toch amatamayim. Your fruits that fell into a water channel. But here, over here, it's really an aqueduct, and amatamayim was the way that they moved water in their day, and it was called amatamayim because it was an amat deep and an amat wide. Those were the dimensions of these water channels. So you have fruit that falls into a water channel. Pashat mishiyadav tamei ot. Someone whose hands were tamei stuck his hands in there to take them out, v'natlan, and took out the fruits. Yadav tohorot. His hands are tohor because he put them into a mikveh. He put them into a water source.
And you have to assume here that this water channel is kasher for a mikveh, and therefore when he puts his hands in, you're allowed to be mitair yadayim in the mikveh, not just through netilat yadayim, you can also do it by submerging your hands in the mikveh. There are actually certain tumot that actually require that you dip your hands in the mikveh, and you can't be mitair them through netilat yadayim.
Uperot einan bechuyutan. The fruits do not have a din of being mukshar the kabel tumah. Now remember, when we talk about mukshar, the kabel tumah means priming food. To be ready to accept tumah, it has to be washed. It has that water that goes over it. One of the seven mashkim go over it. There has to be, when the water or the mashkim go over it, it has to be, we said, ki yutan dumya ki itain. That if it happens passively, it has to be like you did, wanted it if you did it actively, which means you have to want the water on it. Now, wanting the water on it can come in one of two ways. You want the water that's washing the fruits. For instance, you're just washing the fruits. The fruits had mud on them. They fell in here and you really wanted them to be washed. That would be fine. That would already be mukshar the kabel tumah. There's another way to be mukshar the kabel tumah is if you want the water. If you want the water, even though you didn't want it on the fruits, but you wanted the water, that's also enough. So for instance, if you're putting your hands in there and you want it to be mitair your hands, which is the next line in the Gemara, then you want that water. If you want that water, that can then be makshir, the fruits to be mekabel tumah, because you intended for the water to be there, or you're benefiting from that water. If that's the case, then it becomes l'ratzon, that you wanted it, and then it's makshir the kabel tumah. So in the first case, where he has no intent to do anything except take the fruits out, when he puts his hands in there, he doesn't need kavanah, so his hands become tohorim. On the other hand, the fruits don't become mukshar the kabel tumah, because he didn't want them to fall into the channel. And he didn't want the water either. He didn't intend for anything. He just went in to take them out. That was his whole point, was to take the fruits out of the water. If, on the other hand, he wanted his hands to be cleaned or rinsed off by the water, then yadav tehorot, then his hands are tehorim, because here, clearly, he's intending to put his hands in there to get them washed, not just sticking them in there to take the fruits out. Uperot b'chiyutan. But the chiddush here
is that the perot are mukshar the kabel tuma because you wanted the water now. When you put your hands in there, you were trying to rinse your hands in that water. Now you like the water. Even though you don't like them vis-a-vis the fruits, it's enough that you like the water for it to be good enough to be mukshar the kabel tuma, and then it'll affect the fruits. So the rutzon of the water is either you have to want it that the water is washing the fruits, and then that works, or the rutzon is that you want to use whatever that liquid is. You have some use or some reason you want the liquid there, then that liquid then can be makshir the fruits as long as it's still on the fruits when you want the water. And that's what's happening over here. The Tosfot says over here that the hekshir, the kabel tuma, only happens once you've taken the fruits out of the water. Because as long as they're still in the water or attached to the water, it can't be makshir, because only maim tlushim can be makshir, maim mechubarim are not makshir. So it has to be once you take it out of the amata maim, since you wanted that water because you wanted your hands to be washed, then that water that comes off with them will be makshir them, the kabel tuma. So over here, where you do the tvilat yadayim in a talat amayim, that will qualify as netilat yadayim to remove the tuma from your hands. Obviously, it's not going to work for truma, because by truma you need kavana. It's only for chulin, and so it's for one of two items. Either someone's eating chulin, altarat truma, or altarat kodesh, or it's someone who wants netilat yadayim to eat bread. Although the Rashba argues against that, because he says that netilat yadayim for hamotzi requires kavana, and therefore it won't work over here as well, and therefore he's the one who suggests that it is for someone who's doing chulin altarat truma or chulin altarat kodesh. So what you see from there is that if you put your hands in, even without intent, it is successful at being mitaher your hands. So you can see that you don't need kavanah l'chulin, because you put your hands in, they become torim, even though you only intended to take the fruits out. That was your whole intent here. Eitvei rovo l'Rav Nachman. Tavah l'chulin, v'hu chzak l'chulin. Person goes in to do a tefillah for chulin and intends. He has kavanah for chulin. Asur l'maser. He can't eat maser. So now from that statement, it's a little bit problematic, because there it says not only did he go into chulin, huchzak. He intended for chulin, which makes it sound like you need kavanah. So it says there, huchzakin, lo huchzak lo. If you have kavanah, it seems that it works. You don't have kavanah, it doesn't seem to work. So No. You didn't read that right. Afo bishu huchzak to chulin, asur l'maser. The chiddush there is not that you need kavanah for chulin. It's the fact that if you had kavanah for chulin, it's still not good enough for maser. Meaning that we have gradations of tuma'ah and tahara. If a person wants to be tahor with chulin, he doesn't need kavanah at all. You want maser? You have to have in mind that you're being mitahor for maser. You're being mitahor for maser doesn't help you for chuma. Chuma is a higher level. So then if you intend for chuma, that works for chuma, maser, and chulin, but it doesn't help you for kodeshim. If you intend for kodeshim, then you captured everything, and then paraduma is the highest level of tahara. But you have to intend for that tahara. By chulin, the chiddush is not that you need the kavanah. The chiddush is even if you had kavanah, it doesn't help you for the maaser. Eitavei, taval velo hukzak. Person does a tefillah, and has no intention to do the tefillah. Kilo lo taval. It's as if he didn't go to the mikveh. Again, here, it makes it sound like you need kavanah. So go to the mikveh. My lav, kilo lo taval klau. It's as if he didn't go to the mikveh at all. Lo, kilo lo taval the maser. Aval taval the chulin, by going in for tefillah of chulin, that would work. Husavar dechuye kamidachile. He thought that he was just dismissing him. Rava didn't think that was the real way to explain it. He thought Rav Nachman was just trying to get him off his back, and he just said that that's the explanation of the Braita, but it's not necessarily true. Nafak dak v'ashkach. He found another Braita that says it explicitly. Tatanya taval v'lo huksak. If he goes to the mikveh and doesn't have kavanah, mutar l'chulin v'asur l'maser. And there he has the exactly what Rav Nachman described to Rava is the chiddush in the two statements that Rava brought as questions. This explanation, the Braita, really sums it all up, which is if you go into the mikveh without any kavanah, it works for chulin, it doesn't work for maaser. So that's what we learn from that. Now, why over here does Rava believe that Rav Nachman was being dochem and he accepted the previous case by tefillat yadayim? So Baal Tosafot over there say that there's a chiluk between tefillat yadayim where we're mekiel versus tefillat kol gufo where maybe we wouldn't be mekiel. We have a lot of kulot with tefillat yadayim that don't apply to tefillat kol gufo. And for that reason, it might be that there is a distinction. And that's why Rova is somewhat perplexed by the second answer that Rav Nachman's giving and saying maybe it's not such a good answer. He's trying to just silence me about it until he found the braita that indicates that what Rav Nachman said is true. But even after he found the braita, you still have the problem of the Mishnah and Makshirin, and the answer to that would be that Tefillat Yadayim is different. Even according to Rabbi Yochanan, Tefillat Yadayim is different, and therefore it can work even without Kavanah, as opposed to Tefillat Kol Gufo that won't work without Kavanah. Amalei Abaye de Rabbi Yosef, Lema Tavi Tiyufta de Rabbi Yochanan. wow, the fact that you do not need intent for Tara b'mikvah b'chulin should be a strong refutation of Rabbi Yochanan's position. Rav and Rabbi Yochanan argued over here. Rav says she's muteret to her husband when she goes into the mikveh or is forced into the mikveh. She can't eat truma. That sounds exactly like what we just explained here, which is that when chulin, which is the husband, it's fine when she goes in without intent, without kavanah. On the other hand, for truma, she needs kavanah, and that's the failure. That's Rav Shita. Rabbi Yochanan says she's both asurah to her husband and asurah to truma. This should be a refutation of that position of Rabbi Yochanan, because over here you see you do not need kavanah. So Rabbi Yosef says back to Abaye, Rabbi Yochanan hu damark Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef. Ein Ochanami, from all the Tanaic works that we brought until now, it would be a problem for Rabbi Yochanan. But Rabbi Yochanan subscribes to a different Tana. We have a Tana, Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef, who says you need kavanah even for chulin. The Tanya, Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef omer, vechubas. It says with regards to the ga'im of bigadim, that you have to cleanse the clothing. Matam alomar shenit. Why does it say in the pasuk vechubas shenit that you have to actually wash it a second time? So it says by bigadim neganigaim that kohen takes it and puts it away for 7 days. After 7 days, v'imirah kohen, the kohen sees the beged after 7 days. V'inelo pasah nega beged, it did not spread, did not expand. O b'shtil be'erif, o b'chol klior, v'tzikiva kohen v'chibsu et asher bo anaga. Then you cleanse it out, you rinse out, wash out the nega from the beged. Then he puts it away for another 7 days. So any ore that was laundered and the nega does not come back, then it'll be laundered a second time and become tahor. So now the word kibsu is used here twice. In the original cases, the word kibsu is used to mean to launder, to cleanse. In the last statement over here, it says, that kubas is not to launder, but rather to go to the mikveh and become tahor. If you look in the Targum Unklus over there, he actually translates them different. In the original case, he translates that as laundering. Over here, he translates v'chubas sheni v'taher as going to the mikveh to become tahor. So the Gemara wants to know, when it says v'chubas shenit, why does it say you have to do it a second time? It's not really a second time, it's a different type of kubas. The first kibus was one to launder it, to clean it. This kibus is going to the mikveh to be mitaharet. So why are you calling it shenit? So mekish tichboset shnia letichboset rishona. It's comparing or paralleling the mikveh cleaning to the regular laundering or cleaning. Ma tichboset rishona ladat. Just like the original cleansing has to be done with intent because you're trying to clean it out. You're trying to get the nega out. Af tichboset shnia. So too, the second cleansing, which is taking it to the mikveh, ladat, needs to be done with active kavanah or dat. Imal alan bina dat kohen. Maybe you'll say dat means just like the first case, you need the kohen to declare it tamei, or to declare it tahor, or to tell you to take it and to cleanse it. Afkan bina dat kohen. Maybe to over here by the mikveh to make it tahor, you'd also need the kohen involved. Tamalomar vitaher mikol makom. Becomes tahor no matter what. So we don't require kohen, but we still require kavanah or intent. So you see from Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef, when you have something that was a nega, when you're laundering it, you need to know that you're doing that, because that's how you launder. You take it out with intent. So too, when you take it to the mikveh at the end, you need intent. That shows you need kavanah, even when you're being metaher something for chulin. And that'll be the source for Rabbi Yochanan's position. This Tana, Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef, who says even by chulin, you require kavanah. And that's why he says that this woman who was forced into the mikveh is not tehora for her husband, because you need kavanah both for chulin and for truma. Skamativ la Rav Shimi Barashi, umi amar Rabbi Yochanan ochi. Can Rabbi Yochanan really say that? V'amar Rabbi Yochanan alocha gistam mishnah. Doesn't Rabbi Yochanan generally say that alocha is like a stam mishnah? Bitznan. And we have a stam mishnah. Nafla sakin v'shachta. Our mishnah. If a knife falls out of his hand and does a shchita, apo bish shachta kidarka, even though it checked it properly, psula, v'avinan ba. And we qualified or we said about this. Taima de nafla. That's only because it fell unintentionally. Ha, hipila. If you actively push the knife down, ha, hipila hukshira, then it would have been fine. Va'afagav de lo mitkaven. Even though you don't have any kavanah. So you see here that by matters of chulin, you don't require a kavanah. Va'aminan, mantana de lo bayi kavanah l'shchita. Who's the author, the tana, that does not require a kavanah when it comes to shchita? Damarova, Rabbi Notani. It's Rabbi Natan. So you see, by chulin and shchita, you don't need kavanah. So the same should be true when you go to the mikveh. Where it says, B'shchita, filu Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef. In Shchita, even Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef, who requires kavanah for going to the mikveh for chulin, he agrees by Shchita. Midegali rachmono, because the Torah already indicates, mitasek b'kodoshim pasul, someone who is involved with kodoshim, not for the purposes of kodoshim, is pasul. Michlau de chulin lo b'lin and kavanah. And there you see, or you can infer from that, that chulin does not require kavanah. So the nature of kodoshim is that you need active kavanah in order to make the kodoshim good kodoshim. What type of active kavanah, again, may be subject to the same machloket as what we saw before with chulin. If by chulin you require chatichat simanim for the rabbonon, by kodoshim you're going to have intent for shchita or something that is along those lines. That's why mitasek, if you're just cutting something and you happen to do a shchita by kodoshim, that doesn't work. Just the chaticha b'am, it's not going to work. The implications for that are, by chulin, that would be fine. So you see, by the fact that the Torah demands active kavanah by kodoshim, and that means that if you don't have that active kavanah, you just mitasek, it doesn't work. That's true in the world of kodoshim. The fact that the Torah demands it by kodoshim shows you that by chulin, there is no such demand. And even Rabbi Yonatan ben Yosef in general believes that chulin does require kavanah. Over here by Shchita, he would not say so, because the Torah indicates otherwise. It says you need it by Kodoshim, you don't need it by Chulin. So now Gemara says, Rabbanan, what do the Rabbanan do with the fact that from Kodoshim, it sounds like Chulin doesn't require any Kavanah at all, and yet they do require Kavanah l'chaticha. Rabbanan, idlo b'inan Kavanah l'zvicha l'chaticha b'inan, and they still require some level of Kavanah. So the Rabbanan who argue on Rabbi Natan, they don't require Kavanah by Chulin, but they still require that you do it lechaticha, that you do it at least for cutting, and that's the machloka we saw before, where that means just cutting in general. Does that mean cutting of the simanim, which is the view of the Balei HaTosafot, as to how much kavanah you need with regards to the Rabbanon? And then Amar Rava, Baha, Zachinu, Rabbi Natan, Rabbanon. And this is how Rabbi Natan beat the Chachamim, or he basically overcame them, by saying the following, Mikti vechatachta. The pasuk doesn't say you must cut it, it says vizavachtaktiv, that you have to do shchita. Ibin on kavanah l'chaticha, afilu l'zvicha namilibai. If you're telling me that the word of vizavachta tells you that you need to have kavanah for cutting, then it should also have kavanah for shchita, because the word that's used is zavachta, not chatachta. V'ilo b'inin kavanah l'zvicha, then if you don't require a kavanah for shchita, because you're saying that that's what the word zvicha means and you don't need kavanah, v'chaticha namilolibai, then you shouldn't require it for cutting as well. Meaning that the word zvicha is the only word, active verb that you have with regards to preparing the animal. And zvicha means shchita. So either you do or you don't require a kavanah. If you require a kavanah, it has to be full-fledged kavanah. It means even for shchita, not just for chaticha. On the other hand, if you believe that you don't need it for shchita, then you shouldn't need it for chaticha either, because there's nowhere that it's written chaticha. It only writes zvicha, and therefore your interpretation or your bifurcation of the din between chaticha and shchita is not a good limud, because you don't have anywhere to separate or distinguish between shchita and chaticha. Right now, the Gemara comes back to the original question, which is, hechi dami nida shenensa vitavla. How exactly did this take place, that she was forced into the mikveh? Ilema da ansa chaverta v'atvalo. If her friend took her and forced her into the mikveh for tzvila, kavanah de chaverta, kavanah maliyatoi, then her friend's intent that she be in the mikveh should be vicariously create the kavanah that she needs, and it should be the equivalent of her having kavanah, and it should have worked. If her friend's doing it actively, then it should have worked anyway. Ve'od b'truma nami achla. And then she should have been able to eat truma as well, the tnan. Achereshet v'ashota v'asuma. If you have women who are otherwise incapacitated, they're not considered to be b'nei dat. Again, these are all designations of the Gemara, that these individuals are considered to be people who are not b'nei dat. B'shenitrefa dat, or someone who lost their mind. Im pichot, if they have people who are of sound mind, mataknototan, they can help them. They can put them into the mikveh. They can have them become tahor. They can check whether they're a nidah, not a nidah. They can follow their cycle and put them in the mikveh. And then ochlo truma. They can eat truma because someone is managing it. So you see that you can have vicarious kavanah be imbued in your tzvilah if someone else is doing it and putting you in and directing you in that way. So if someone else is forcing you into the mikveh, first of all, it should be totally fine because that person had kavanah l'tzvilah. And number two is, it should even be good enough for truma. Forget about for a husband, it should work for truma as well. So Amar Papa, but Rabbi Natan, according to Rabbi Natan, because Rabbi Natan has a lower threshold or standard for what's considered to be kavanah, so naflamina gesher, she fell off a bridge. Or for the Rabbanan, it was a case where she was in the water, but she was going down to cool off. And the way Rashi explains it over here, the lo lidvol, she went in to cool off in the water, not to go to the mikveh. And then she fell into the water totally. So it's interesting. Rashi says that when she went down to cool off, she wasn't submerging herself in the water. She only then later was submerged in the water because she fell or something happened that she ended up getting submerged in the water. That's nansa. She had no intent to be completely submerged in the water. She had intended to cool off. Now Rashi says cool off means not go in the water entirely. You could have seen it be that she went down to cool off, and even if she was going to go totally in the water, her whole intent was to submerge herself and be cool, and not to tovel. And then she falls in, that makes you tahor. So that's, according to the Rabbanon, who have a higher threshold, you have to be actively engaged in something that's similar to entering into the water. Then, if something else happens, it makes you tahor. According to Rabbi Natan, where you don't need kavanah whatsoever, even if you're walking across a bridge, and you slip off and fall into the water, that'd be considered to be going to the mikveh, according to Rabbi Natan. Amar Rava, shachat para, v'shachat beima acheret ima, l'divri akol psula. If you are shechting the para aduma, and while you're shechting the para aduma, you also shecht another animal along with it, the divri akol psula. According to everyone, the para is psula, because we had before, we saw on daf chavdera bun bet, we brought from the Mishnah in para, that kolo sukim ba para, mitchila v'atsof mitamim begadim, oposlim atabam lacha acheret. If you engage in any other activity while you're doing something with the para, that's posel de para aduma. So here, where you're shechting the para aduma, and you also are shechting another animal along with it, that's a malacha acheret, and that's posel. In addition, we have a miut, or a gzeret akadu, which says v'shachat ota, that you can only shecht the para aduma, and you can't be shechting anything else at the same time. So here, you're failing on both fronts. You're shechting something else at the time you're shechting the para aduma, and you're doing a malacha acheret while you're doing the shechting of the para aduma. So both of those are going to disqualify the para aduma, but the shechita you do on the other animal is going to be a fine shechita, and that animal will be fine. Nishchata beima acheret ima. On the other hand, if it happens to be that while you were shechting the para aduma, you also shechted another animal. You did not intend for that. It just happened to be there was another animal standing side by side, and you ended up shechting it. The Rabbi Natan para psula beima ksherah. Rabbi Natan, who doesn't require a kavanah at all, then the para is problematic, and the behema that you did is kshera. Since you were successful at doing a shchita on the other animal, because according to Rabbi Natan, you don't need kavanah at all, and you didn't intend for this other animal, it just happened to be standing there and it went through and you ended up shechting it, that's enough in order to be kasher, according to Rabbi Natan. So therefore, the shchita that you did on the other animal is kasher, and then you violated the shechatota, the gzeret hakatuv, that you only allowed to shech the para alone, and not something else. Now, as far as melacha acheret, there's no problem here, because it was unintentional. You didn't intend to do this, so you're not distracted. You don't have hesach adat by doing melacha acheret, because melacha acheret was completely unintentional. From the perspective of melacha acheret, you're fine here. The problem is the gzeirat akotub of a shechatota, and there you fail because you did shecht another animal. And therefore, it's not solely shecht in the paraduma. That's why, according to Rabbi Natan, it would be psula. The rabbonon parak shera beima psula. According to Rabbanu, we have a higher standard of shechita, that if it just happens to be that you shechted the other animal, you didn't even have intent to cut over there. Or according to Tosva, you didn't have intent to cut the simanim, you didn't even know the other animal was there. So therefore, that shechita is psula. That shechita is psula, then the paraduma is kshera. Because again, melacha acheret you're not doing over here because there was no hesach adat, you didn't intend for the other shechita. You're not in violation of a shechat ota because the other shechita wasn't successful. And therefore, the paraduma is kshera. Pshita. All of this is pshita. What are you telling us that we wouldn't have known? All the pieces of the puzzle you could have put together yourself. What are you telling me that I wouldn't have known by doing this myself? Nishkata beima acheret, the Rabbi Natan, it's trichale. The fact that you actually shechted another animal according to Rabbi Natan, that didn't you need to teach me. You would have thought when it says v'shachatota by the paraduma, that it means lo ota v'chaverta, you can't shecht it and its friend. Ve'echi dami, what's the scenario? K'gon sheshechat shtei parot ba'adoi adodi. You're shechting two parot adumot at the same time. And that's when it says v'shechat ota. Shechat ota is only relevant in the world of para aduma. Aval behema duchulin eim alo. But maybe when it was a behema of chulin, I would not think that that's the case. K'mash malan, that even a shechita v'behema of chulin is a violation of a shechat ota that's written by the para aduma, that you have to exclusively shech the para aduma. So that's what Gemara concludes. Chatach delat ima. If you were shecht in the paraduma, and while you were doing that, you intended to cut gourds with the same knife at the same time, then divya kol psula. Everybody's going to agree here that the paraduma is psula because you were doing malacha acheret with intent. That means that you had hesach adat. That is a problem for the paraduma, and it's disqualified. Nechtecha delat ima. If you shechted the paraduma and it happens to be there were gourds over there and you happen to slice the gourds at the same time, divrei hakol kshera. There, everybody agrees it's kshera. Because over there, there's no problem with malacha acheret because it was completely unintentional. So there's no hesach adat. There's no problem of shechat ota, the gzeret hakatuv, because the gzeret hakatuv means shecht the paraduma and not something else. Over here, what you're cutting is not shechita. Whatever you're cutting on the other side, it's not doing shechita. Therefore, it's not a violation of the shechat ota, and that's why in that case, everybody would agree that the para aduma is kshera. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Lamed Bet Amud Aleph.